The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, life after death. You'll hear great thinkers on these subjects and more on the Paranormal Podcast, the longest running podcast of its type. I'm Jim Harold, and I invite you to join me as we explore the mysteries of life. I bet you love these topics just as much as I do, but don't worry, I won't tell anyone. Join me for some great paranormal conversation. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
In a letter to her friend Sally Orne, dated March 15, 1866, the widow Mary Todd Lincoln wrote, quote, "That miserable inebriate Johnson had cognizance of my husband's death. As sure as you and I live, Johnson had some hand in all this," end quote.
Mary Todd Lincoln lived her life convinced that her husband, President Abraham Lincoln, died because the vice president, Andrew Johnson, conspired with John Wilkes Booth to eliminate him.
She wasn't the only person who thought this. Johnson was subject to a congressional review where several members of the House and Senate openly voiced their opinion that Johnson had usurped the presidency.
But in spite of investigations and even an attempted impeachment, Johnson served his full term as president. If Mary Todd Lincoln was correct, a murderer had seized the most powerful office in the United States. Welcome to Conspiracy Theories, the podcast where we dig into the complicated stories behind the world's most controversial events and search for the truth. I'm Carter Roy.
I'm Molly Brandenburg.
And neither of us are conspiracy theorists.
But we are open-minded, skeptical, and curious. Don't get us wrong. Sometimes the official version is the truth.
But sometimes it's not.
You can listen to previous episodes of Conspiracy Theories, as well as all of Parcast's other shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Many of you have asked us how you can help support the show, and if you enjoy the podcast, the best way to do that is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening.
This is the second of 2 episodes exploring the assassination of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln.
Last week, we established that Lincoln was an incredibly controversial president within his own time. Overseeing a deeply divided country through the Civil War, Lincoln was surrounded by rivals, even within his own administration.
Officially, Lincoln was assassinated in 1865 by an actor named John Wilkes Booth. Booth worked as a Secret Service agent for the Confederacy, and, with a small group of collaborators, he had plotted to kidnap Lincoln and hold him hostage in Confederate territory.
According to the official story, Booth defied the Confederate Secret Service's orders when he decided to assassinate Lincoln.
This week, we'll explore the possibility that officials, either within the Confederacy or the Union, may have ordered the assassination or assisted Booth in his escape.
Conspiracy theory number one. John Wilkes Booth's Confederate Secret Service handlers ordered him to assassinate Lincoln. We know that Booth and his collaborators had already been recruited to kidnap President Lincoln. With the war going poorly for the South, Confederate President Jefferson Davis may have changed Booth's mission from a kidnapping to a murder.
Conspiracy theory number two. Lincoln's Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, conspired with Booth to eliminate Lincoln. Stanton, who had a history of bending the rules to achieve his goals, oversaw the investigation after Lincoln's assassination, and he made several key decisions that allowed Booth to escape. Were those bad decisions an accident, or was he actually working to protect Booth?
Conspiracy theory number three. Lincoln's vice president, Andrew Johnson, ordered Booth to kill Lincoln. Based on a near meeting between the two a few hours before the assassination, many speculate that Johnson and Booth may have been friendlier than the official record suggests. Additionally, Johnson benefited from Lincoln's death, as after the assassination, he ascended to the presidency.
Finally, conspiracy theory number four is our most out there conspiracy, that Booth faked his own death with the assistance of either Stanton or Johnson. While this theory doesn't change the circumstances of Lincoln's assassination, it implies that officials in the U.S. government assisted Booth in his escape, which could implicate those officials in the assassination as well.
The most obvious of Lincoln's enemies were those who had, less than a week before his assassination, been at war on the side of the Confederacy. Even after General Lee's surrender, some Confederate troops planned to keep fighting, and the Confederate leadership still saw Lincoln as an enemy leader.
This brings us to conspiracy theory number one. The president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, ordered Lincoln's assassination in order to destabilize the Union and win the Civil War.
While Jefferson Davis was never officially charged for any crimes related to secession or Lincoln's assassination, many in the Union still assumed he was guilty. Even before Booth was apprehended, the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, had begun preparing a case to try to prove that Lincoln's death was the result of a Confederate plot.
On May 2, 1865, about 2 weeks after Lincoln's death, Andrew Johnson signed a presidential proclamation which read, quote, "It appears from evidence in the Bureau of Military Justice that the atrocious murder of the late Abraham Lincoln and the attempted assassination of William H. Seward were incited, concerted, and procured by Jefferson Davis," end quote.
Davis had already fled the Confederate capital in early April, long before Lincoln was assassinated, and was currently in hiding. Johnson's government offered a $100,000 reward for Davis's capture. In 2018 money, that's more than $1.5 million.
During the case against Booth's conspirators, the Justice Department brought in several witnesses who testified that Davis had ordered the assassination, or that he'd been actively involved with the plotting. Witnesses named Richard Montgomery and James Merritt testified that they were double agents who had infiltrated the Confederate Secret Service and had each personally seen Confederate leaders plan and authorize Lincoln's assassination.
But Montgomery and Merritt were proven to be perjurers before the case concluded, and no other concrete evidence was ever introduced during the trial.
In spite of their efforts, Secretary of War Edwin Stanton and the Union prosecutors weren't able to prove any concrete connection between Confederate leaders and the assassination of Lincoln.
But whether they could prove it or not, there definitely was a connection between Jefferson Davis and John Wilkes Booth. As we discussed last week, Booth worked as an agent for the Confederate Secret Service. His initial mission, which he failed to achieve, was to kidnap Lincoln and hold him ransom to pressure General Ulysses S. Grant to trade high-ranking Confederate prisoners of war.
Jefferson Davis oversaw operations of the Secret Service, and he personally approved orders for his agents, including Booth, to attempt to kidnap Lincoln.
When Booth began plotting to kill Lincoln instead of kidnapping him, he conspired with the same men who had helped him plot Lincoln's kidnapping. Several people who sheltered Booth and helped him escape after the assassination were fellow Secret Service agents.
Davis might not have personally approved Booth's plan to assassinate Lincoln, but his Secret Service definitely gave him the resources he needed to do it.
In addition to his Secret Service work, Booth was a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, a secret society dedicated to preserving the institution of slavery.
The Knights of the Golden Circle formed during the lead-up to the Civil War and may have been one of the earliest agitators for secession, a campaign that they ramped up after Abraham Lincoln's first-term victory. As they're a secret society, the Knights' specific activities can be difficult to discern, especially centuries after the fact. But we do know that they planned to conquer Mexico and parts of Central America and turn them into an independent slave-holding nation.
Besides John Wilkes Booth, other members of the Knights of the Golden Circle included his co-conspirators John Surratt and Michael O'Loughlin, as well as Confederate President Jefferson Davis.
We know Booth was working for Davis as a Secret Service agent, and we know that Booth and his accomplices shared a secret society membership with Davis, but we still can't say if Lincoln's death was on Davis's orders. Even if Davis did authorize Lincoln's assassination, Booth would have been an unusual choice for the job. He had no military training, and as a famous actor, he had a highly recognizable face.
On the other hand, as a well-known and respected actor, Booth had access to government elites that other Secret Service agents wouldn't have. Booth's ability to travel in distinguished circles served him well as a spy, and could also be valuable assets in an assassin.
Another aspect to explore is the timing of Lincoln's assassination. While the Civil War was still raging, Booth's kidnapping plot at least had a clear goal: prisoner exchanges, which had been halted by Union General Ulysses S. Grant. After the South's surrender, a kidnapped Lincoln no longer held the same tactical advantage, and a dead Lincoln would gain them nothing.
Except the Civil War didn't actually end with General Lee's surrender at Appomattox. Lee's army was only one of several Southern armies, and even after Davis received word of the surrender, he wanted to continue to fight. It's not unreasonable to think that Davis could have issued assassination orders as part of a last-ditch effort to destabilize the Union.
Besides the murder of Abraham Lincoln on the night of April 14, 1865, Booth also plotted two other attempted assassinations. Although the attempts failed, Booth's collaborators plotted to kill Vice President Andrew Johnson and the Secretary of State, William Seward.
As we discussed last week, Booth's collaborator, Lewis Powell, forced his way into the Secretary of State, William Seward's home on April 14th, the same night that Booth shot Lincoln. Powell fought with Seward's house guests and ultimately stabbed five people, including his target, though all of those injured survived.
Another of Booth's conspirators, George Atzerodt, was tasked with assassinating the vice president, Andrew Johnson. Atzerodt never made any attempt on Johnson, instead spending the night drinking in a bar.
If all of Booth's plotting had gone according to plan, not only would President Lincoln have died, but Vice President Johnson and the Secretary of State, William Seward, would also have been assassinated in a single night. This was no personal revenge mission. It looks like Booth was attempting to destabilize the entire United States government.
Lincoln was the first president to be assassinated, but not the first president to die in office. In the 25 years prior to Lincoln's assassination, two other presidents had died of natural causes while in office: William Henry Harrison and Zachary Taylor. By the time of Lincoln's death, the passage of power from president to vice president was hardly a potentially destabilizing action.
But to date, the president and vice president have never both died during the same term. Davis might have believed that a simultaneous attack on the president, vice president, and secretary of state would create just enough political confusion that the South might rise again and overtake the Union.
We do know of one other assassination attempt that Davis authorized at around the same time, and for exactly these reasons. On April 1, 1865, 2 weeks before Lincoln's assassination, an explosives expert named Thomas Harney received orders from the Confederacy to blow up the White House with Lincoln and other government officials inside. Confederate leaders hoped this would destabilize the Union government and give the Confederacy more time to rally their forces.
John Wilkes Booth's co-conspirator, George Atzerodt, later confessed that he was aware of the plot, which suggests Booth was probably aware of it as well.
The plot to blow up the White House never materialized because Union soldiers captured Harney and his explosives team on April 10th, the day after Lee's surrender, and 4 days before Booth shot Lincoln. While it's possible that in those 4 days, Davis learned of Harney's failure and issued new orders to Booth, it's not likely, since such rapid correspondence was extremely difficult during the chaotic final days of the war.
The lack of concrete evidence connecting Davis to Lincoln's assassination is notable in light of how motivated prosecutors were to prove Davis guilty. The Union government didn't even have enough evidence to bring charges against Davis. They figured out about the kidnapping plot, but as for the assassination, that remained firmly in the realm of speculation.
Overall, I give this theory a 5 out of 10. Davis had a compelling motive to eliminate Lincoln, and the link between Booth's Secret Service activities and his assassination plot are powerful and compelling, so there's too much there to dismiss the theory out of hand. The missing piece lies in the lack of any physical evidence or credible witnesses to support the claims against Davis. Especially in light of the Union's aggressive investigation and attempted prosecution, if a smoking gun existed that could prove Davis was complicit, the prosecutor should have found it. The fact that no concrete evidence has ever been produced throws the entire theory into doubt.
We can't prove that the leaders of the Confederacy ordered Abraham Lincoln killed. However, Lincoln had many rivals, even within his administration. Lincoln may have been killed by someone he would otherwise consider an ally.
We'll discuss our second conspiracy theory after a short break.
Now back to the story.
In 1937, a chemist named Otto Eisenschimmel published a book titled Why Was Lincoln Murdered? In the book, Eisenschimmel claimed to have exhaustively researched the details of Abraham Lincoln's 1865 assassination and came to the conclusion that John Wilkes Booth was operating under the instruction of someone close to Lincoln, his own Secretary of War.
This brings us to conspiracy theory number two. Secretary of War Edwin Stanton collaborated with John Wilkes Booth to kill President Abraham Lincoln.
Stanton was definitely a controversial figure. Shortly after he was appointed, Stanton pushed for numerous new laws that would expand his position's power and legal authority. He also routinely violated the Constitution, including the prohibitions against habeas corpus, or holding a prisoner under arrest without charges or a trial.
Stanton claimed that he had the right to arrest anyone who, in his own words, quote, engaged by act, speech, or writing in discouraging volunteer enlistments or in any other disloyal practice against the United States, end quote. He arrested dozens of writers and newspaper editors who were critical of Lincoln without ever officially pressing charges against them.
According to Stanton, the Civil War represented a crisis point in United States history, and his means were justified by the need for national stability.
But Stanton's arrests and political maneuvering also showed a tendency to bend the law to suit his needs, a trait we would see again in the immediate aftermath of Lincoln's assassination.
Stanton's less-than-spotless reputation isn't the only reason conspiracy theorists are suspicious of him. Last week, we discussed how, on the night of the assassination, Lincoln was left unprotected in Ford's Theater after his bodyguard, John Parker, left his station. It was Stanton who hired Parker and assigned him to guard Lincoln that night.
Lincoln didn't trust Parker, and he specifically requested that Stanton assign a different, more trustworthy bodyguard that night, but Stanton refused.
According to Stanton, Lincoln's preferred bodyguard, Thomas Eckert, was unavailable that night. However, after Lincoln was shot and a messenger was dispatched to notify Eckert, the messenger found Eckert at home, doing nothing in particular.
We should also mention another strange detail about Lincoln's night at the theater. Last week, we explained that Lincoln initially invited General Ulysses S. Grant and his wife to attend the theater. When Grant canceled his plans, Lincoln invited General Henry Rathbone and his fiancée.
Like Lincoln, Grant had his own team of bodyguards. If Grant hadn't canceled his plans, he and Lincoln would have had two bodyguards present, and even after Parker abandoned his post, there still would have been one guard there to protect Lincoln.
We don't know why Grant canceled his plans with Lincoln that night, but we do know that, as Secretary of War, Stanton worked closely with both President Lincoln and General Grant. It's possible that Stanton encouraged Grant to skip the theater, knowing Grant's bodyguard's absence was necessary to his assassination plot.
It's possible, but it's entirely speculation.
Even more suspiciously, during Stanton's entire investigation, Lincoln's bodyguard Parker was never investigated or charged for abandoning his post and leaving the president unguarded. Perhaps Stanton himself had instructed Parker to leave his post and he was protecting his accomplice.
Or perhaps he thought the bodyguard was already suffering enough guilt for his fatal mistake, and there was no purpose in punishing him further. It's impossible to know Stanton's true motivations.
Hours after Lincoln was shot, Stanton met with witnesses from Ford's Theater to identify the assassin. Because John Wilkes Booth was so recognizable as an actor, witnesses were able to identify him almost immediately.
Booth's personal associations, fellow actors, and frequent theatergoers were all able to identify him. Corporal James Tanner took notes during Stanton's interrogations, and 2 days later wrote in a letter, quote, "In 15 minutes, I had testimony enough down to hang Wilkes Booth," end quote.
In spite of the ample evidence that Booth was the assassin, Stanton didn't publicly speak about Booth's identity until several hours later. Many newspaper printing presses began printing their early editions between 2 and 2:30 a.m., but Stanton didn't notify them of the assassin's identity until 3:20. Because of this delay, the New York Times, New York Tribune, New York Daily News, and New York Herald were unable to identify Booth in their earliest morning editions.
Outside the immediate area, the delay was even greater. New Orleans newspapers didn't receive Stanton's reports until April 19th, 5 days after the assassination. Virginia's Charleston Courier and Atlanta's Intelligencer received their earliest reports the day after that, April 20th.
In the aftermath of the shooting, finding and apprehending Booth should have been Stanton's number one priority. Every minute counted if they were going to find him before he fled the area. But without a positive identification in the papers, the public had no way of knowing to watch for Booth. It's impossible to understand why he delayed for so long.
Once Stanton identified John Wilkes Booth as Lincoln's killer, he ordered that the military close all roads leading out of Washington, D.C. Every road and bridge was put under watch, except for one.
The only bridge that wasn't shut down, the one leading to Port Tobacco, Maryland, was the very bridge that John Wilkes Booth took to escape Washington, D.C. and evade capture. Conspiracy theorists see the open road as evidence that Stanton and Booth had previously agreed upon this escape route so that Booth could get away with his crime.
But the truth is, Stanton didn't intentionally leave the bridge open and unguarded. There was no telegraph station near the Port Tobacco, Maryland Bridge, so Stanton was unable to notify anyone to close the road except by sending a messenger. Given the speed with which Booth fled Washington, D.C., he probably escaped the city roughly half an hour after he shot Lincoln, long before Stanton's messengers could arrive and close down the bridge.
But Booth couldn't stay ahead of his pursuers forever. 2 weeks after the assassination, Union troops, under Stanton's orders, finally cornered Booth inside a barn in Virginia.
Stanton ordered his troops to capture Booth alive for questioning. But in spite of these orders, a man named Boston Corbett shot Booth through the neck, killing him.
Corbett claimed that he'd fired on Booth out of fear that Booth was going to fire upon and injure one of his men. Eyewitness reports of what happened are inconsistent, but the barn's owner and his 12-year-old son both testified that Booth never raised his gun. Two of the other soldiers also testified that Corbett snuck up behind Booth and shot him in the back of the head, which hardly sounds like self-defense.
What is clear is that Booth's death meant the Union troops could never question him to determine if he was a lone actor or working under orders.
If Stanton really did conspire with Booth to kill Lincoln, secretly ordering Corbett to silence Booth would ensure that Stanton's plot would never come to light.
After Booth was shot, the officers gathered his possessions, including an appointment book that Booth used as a diary. Initial reports suggested the diary was whole and intact, but a later examination found stubs, as if pages had been ripped out. Investigators ultimately determined that 18 pages had been removed from Booth's diary.
While it's possible that the original investigators simply didn't see the stubs, some have suggested that the diary was intact when Booth died, and the investigators removed pages that implicated Stanton in the assassination.
Whatever happened to those 18 pages, for over a century, it looked like they were lost for good. That is, until 1975, when a Massachusetts man named Joseph Lynch claimed that Edwin Stanton's heirs had given him the deceased Secretary of War's effects, including the 18 missing pages from Booth's diary.
Lynch claimed these pages referred to a plot hatched between Booth and Stanton, alluding to but never explicitly describing plans to kill Lincoln.
2 years later, in 1977, the FBI opened a reinvestigation into the circumstances surrounding Lincoln's assassination. But when the investigators attempted to contact Lynch to examine his pages, he refused.
Not only did Lynch never turn over his diary pages to the FBI, he also refused to show the pages to the press. A movie studio called Sun Classic Pictures, interested in adapting a movie based on the missing pages, paid Lynch $39,000 for a transcript of the missing pages, but he still refused to show them the originals.
The only evidence that the pages even existed was Lynch's word.
After the FBI concluded its investigation with no new findings, two historians, Richard Sloan and James Hall, approached Lynch to review the transcripts of the diary pages for themselves. They found numerous discrepancies between the so-called diary entries and the facts that were known about Booth's life.
For example, the diary pages dated March 22, 1865, claimed Booth was in Washington, D.C. when he was known to be in New York during that time. Well-documented events were listed with the wrong dates and locations. Hall and Sloan's conclusion was that the diary entries were clearly a hoax.
As the actual diary pages are still missing to this day, we have no way of knowing what they said and if they actually implicated Stanton, or anyone else, for that matter.
Let's return to Stanton's investigation and the trial that followed. In 1865, seven people identified as Booth's co-conspirators were arrested and stood trial. But at Stanton's urging, their trial would be non-traditional and, as some have claimed, unconstitutional.
Rather than giving Booth's conspirators a civilian jury of their peers, Stanton insisted on a military tribunal.
The very concept of a military tribunal wasn't introduced into the United States until the Civil War, and the new means of convicting criminals outside the traditional courtroom was highly controversial.
Stanton feared that civilians in the Union were likely to be Confederate sympathizers. Opinions about the Civil War weren't neatly split along North and South lines, and even one juror who was sympathetic to Booth's conspirators could be enough to keep them from a guilty verdict. A military courtroom full of soldiers who had fought and died for the Union granted him a greater likelihood of a guilty verdict.
A military tribunal also had fewer restrictions on how the prosecution could present evidence. A tribunal could also convene and reach a verdict far more quickly than a civilian trial, meaning the conspirators and their lawyers would have less time to prepare and mount a defense.
The accused weren't given a complete list of their charges until the night before their trial. One of Booth's conspirators, Edmund Spangler, didn't even secure counsel until the third day of his trial. If Stanton had conspired against Lincoln, he ensured that his co-conspirators would not have the opportunity to produce any evidence identifying him as a co-conspirator.
The one aspect of this theory we haven't examined is the motive. According to this theory, Stanton orchestrated everything. Lincoln's assassination, Booth's escape and later death, and the trials of Booth's conspirators as part of a larger coup to take over the presidency.
At the time of Lincoln's assassination, the line of succession placed the Secretary of War sixth in line for the presidency, after the Vice President, Speaker of the House, President pro tempore of the Senate, the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of the Treasury.
If Stanton was eliminating those ahead of him in the line of succession, he would have needed to order far more than the three assassinations Booth and his conspirators attempted the night of April 14th.
Unless Stanton simply wanted to eliminate Lincoln in favor of the more pliable Andrew Johnson.
But Johnson and Stanton were hardly allies. Stanton was so critical of Johnson's presidency, Johnson tried to have him fired in 1867. In response, Stanton's allies in Congress passed a law called the Tenure of Office Act, which prevented the president from removing Senate-appointed officials, like the Secretary of War, without Senate approval.
Johnson ignored the Tenure of Office Act and fired Stanton anyway, but he was shortly thereafter reappointed by Congress. Stanton then argued that Johnson had committed an impeachable offense in violating the act and pushed for an impeachment trial.
Ultimately, Johnson avoided impeachment by only one vote. Stanton resigned as Secretary of War shortly thereafter. If Stanton had thought a Johnson presidency would help him increase his own power, he was sorely mistaken.
The theory that Stanton was responsible for Lincoln's death originated from a single source. Otto Eisenschimmel's 1937 book, Why Was Lincoln Murdered?
Let's discuss Eisenschimmel for a moment. He was not a historian, but a chemist who treated conspiracy theorizing as a hobby and later as an income source. He rose to notoriety when his first book, Why Was Lincoln Murdered, was published, but historians immediately panned it as mere fiction.
Ultimately, most of the so-called evidence that Stanton conspired against Lincoln is circumstantial. While he may have delayed in identifying Booth and violated the rights of Booth's conspirators, none of that proves Stanton conspired with Booth. He may have simply mishandled the investigation.
As for the missing pages in Booth's diary, we have no way of knowing what they said. They may not implicate Stanton or even have anything to do with Lincoln's assassination at all.
That said, not every one of Eisenschimmel's theories can be easily explained away. We still have no explanation for why Lincoln's preferred bodyguard, Eckert, was supposedly unavailable the night Lincoln was killed.
Then there's the fact that Stanton had unchecked ambition and disregard for his constitutional limitations, as evidenced by his regular abuses of power before and after Lincoln's assassination. It's not totally out of line to suggest he might have used murderous means to expand his own power. Overall, we give this theory a 6 out of 10.
One of the biggest factors that undermines the theory that Stanton plotted against Lincoln is the lack of motive. After Lincoln's death, Stanton held the same position for a short amount of time until he resigned during Johnson's administration. He didn't benefit at all from the assassination.
But there's another member of Lincoln's administration who had a clear motive to want Lincoln dead. Andrew Johnson. As vice president, he would inherit the presidency if Lincoln died. And the evidence connecting Johnson to Lincoln's murder is compelling.
On April 14, 1865, the night of Lincoln's assassination, Vice President Andrew Johnson was staying at a hotel called the Kirkwood House. That afternoon, he missed a visitor who left a calling card for the vice president.
The card read, "Don't wish to disturb you. Are you at home? J. Wilkes Booth."
More on this after a quick break. Now, back to the story. The day of Abraham Lincoln's assassination on April 14, 1865, John Wilkes Booth visited Andrew Johnson's hotel room. As Johnson wasn't in his room, Booth left his calling card. The card and the unknown purpose of Booth's visit are hotly debated among conspiracy theorists today.
This brings us to conspiracy theory number 3. Andrew Johnson had Lincoln eliminated so that he could seize the presidency for himself.
Lincoln and Johnson were rivals on the campaign trail. Lincoln was a Republican and Johnson a Democrat, and they ran together on a unity ticket in 1864 solely to appeal to a broader base.
Their relationship grew strained on the day of Lincoln's inauguration. Johnson was publicly drunk and, in Lincoln's opinion, made a fool of himself. From that point onward, Lincoln and Johnson's personal relationship was tense. It all boiled over when they disagreed about the best approach to Reconstruction. The arguments probably would have continued throughout Lincoln's term if he hadn't been assassinated just 4 months after his second inauguration.
Well, let's discuss the card Booth left for Johnson at the Kirkwood House. He left his card with the desk clerk, who in turn placed the card in Johnson's personal attendance message box.
That personal attendant, William A. Browning, was an acquaintance of Booth's. The calling card wasn't specifically addressed to Johnson by name, and it's more likely than not that Booth's note was actually intended for Browning.
It's also possible that Booth came to the hotel to confirm that Johnson was still staying there, since Johnson was a target in the triple assassination plot. If that was the case, however, he wouldn't have had any reason to leave a calling card and arouse Johnson's suspicion.
There's no evidence that Booth and Johnson ever actually met in person. In fact, the only evidence of any connection between the two is the card.
Still, this visit and the note that Booth left behind made Mary Todd Lincoln a lifelong believer in Johnson's complicity in the assassination. We quoted her suspicions at the beginning of the episode.
She wasn't the only person who believed in Johnson's guilt. In the aftermath of Lincoln's death, some members of Congress weren't shy about expressing their suspicions.
On January 24, 1867, Missouri Representative Benjamin Lone openly accused Johnson of conspiring with the Confederacy to get rid of Lincoln. He said, quote, "An assassin's bullet wielded and directed by rebel hands and paid for by rebel gold made Andrew Johnson president. The price that he was to pay for his promotion was treachery," end quote.
That same year, a full congressional investigation was launched into Johnson's possible complicity in Lincoln's death.
The investigation searched for whatever evidence they could find, even offering amnesty to co-conspirators who could implicate Johnson.
But despite their best efforts, the investigation was unable to turn up a single piece of evidence beyond the card Booth had left for him. There's one more major hole in the theory that Johnson plotted to kill Lincoln. He was one of three men that Booth targeted for assassination on the night of April 14th.
While Johnson was a target, no attempt was ever made on his life. Johnson's would-be assassin, George Atzerodt, went to Johnson's hotel and drank at the bar, but never actually attempted to hurt or kill his target.
In theory, Booth could have known that Atzerodt would be unable or unwilling to follow through with his attack, and that Johnson was never in any real danger.
Or the assassination plot that never coalesced could have been a ploy to deflect suspicion away from Johnson. As a target of Booth's conspiracy, he couldn't be implicated.
However, if Booth wanted to deflect suspicion from Johnson, he wouldn't have left his card at his hotel.
In the end, regardless of whether or not Andrew Johnson conspired to eliminate Abraham Lincoln, he was very sympathetic to those who had conspired against Lincoln. In 1869, Johnson pardoned Booth's surviving conspirators, who had only served 4 years of their life sentences.
One of the conspirators, Michael O'Loughlin, died of yellow fever in prison before Johnson could pardon him. As for the other three, Johnson argued that their sentences had been overly harsh and that they were not closely connected enough to the plot against Lincoln to deserve a lengthy prison term.
One of those men was Dr. Samuel Mudd, who treated Booth's broken leg and sheltered him for 5 days after the assassination. Other than treating his patient, Mudd was not involved in the plot against Lincoln.
Edmund Spangler, another of Booth's friends, had watched Booth's horse for him outside of Ford's Theater during the assassination. While Spangler wasn't aware of what Booth planned to do inside, his assistants ensured escape for Booth.
Finally, Samuel Arnold was a member of Booth's Secret Service cell and had been part of the plot to kidnap Lincoln, but he could not be connected to the assassination plot, and he wasn't even in Washington, D.C. on April 14th when Lincoln was killed.
The connections between these conspirators and Lincoln's death were tenuous at best. At least this was Johnson's claim when he pardoned Booth's conspirators. To others, though, his leniency was interpreted as a sign of his sympathy to the conspirators.
Additionally, Johnson was sympathetic to the Confederate States. Johnson was a Southerner and a former slave owner. His approach to post-war Reconstruction was to let bygones be bygones. He thought that enough damage had already been done to the South during the war, and post-war Reconstruction was the time to repair the damage, not to further penalize the rebels.
We should note that Lincoln also wanted to focus on unification over punishment and had expressed intentions to institute lenient Reconstruction policies. On this issue at least, Johnson and Lincoln had comparable goals, and killing Lincoln did not actually advance Johnson's agenda. Overall, there's little evidence to link Johnson to Lincoln's death. Even a congressional investigation couldn't build a compelling case against Johnson.
The only piece of real evidence is the calling card John Wilkes Booth left for Johnson the afternoon of the assassination. However, even that card has an alternate explanation, that Booth was calling not on Johnson, but on his friend who worked as his personal steward. Overall, I give this theory a 2 out of 10.
The theories we've discussed so far have focused on Lincoln's assassination and Booth's escape. The next theory is a change of pace, focusing more on the aftermath and on an alternate life story for John Wilkes Booth.
In 1907, a traveling carnival man named Finis L. Bates announced a new exhibit, a mummified corpse that he claimed belonged to the recently deceased John Wilkes Booth.
According to Bates, Booth was not actually shot to death in 1865. Instead, Union agents killed a lookalike, then covered up Booth's escape.
Our final and most out there conspiracy is generally treated as an extension of theories 2 or 3, but for the purposes of this episode, we're treating it as a theory of its own. Conspiracy theory number 4, John Wilkes Booth faked his death and lived for decades after Lincoln's assassination under an assumed name.
Last week, we talked about the official story of Booth's death. As a quick recap, after he killed Lincoln, Booth and his collaborator Harold fled into Virginia. They hid in Garrett's barn, and it was there that Union troops found Booth and Harold.
The troops were able to capture and release Harold, but feared to engage in a shootout with Booth. When Booth refused to surrender, the investigators lit the barn on fire. Then, in spite of explicit orders to take Booth alive for questioning, Boston Corbett shot Booth in the neck and killed him.
If Booth's death was faked and covered up, someone with authority over the Union troops must have overseen the plan. Either Edwin Stanton or Andrew Johnson would have had the power to order the troops to lie about who had actually died at Garrett's barn.
If either Johnson or Stanton did order Booth to kill Lincoln, they would want to ensure Booth could not be captured and questioned, exposing the treasonous alliance. Faking Booth's death would justify calling off the nationwide manhunt for Lincoln's killer.
According to Bates, after staging the events in Garrett's barn, John Wilkes Booth adopted a new identity as a merchant selling tobacco and whiskey. Finnis Bates befriended John Wilkes Booth in his new identity, John St. Helen, and Booth eventually revealed his true identity to him. On the evening of January 13, 1903, Booth drank poison, and he died the next morning. His suicide note included a will, but gave no reason for why he took his own life, nor did Bates speculate on the matter.
After Booth died, Bates acquired his corpse and featured it as an attraction at traveling carnivals. He also wrote a book detailing the secrets he'd learned about Booth's life, titled, quote, Escape and Suicide of John Wilkes Booth. He published the book in 1907, the same year he began exhibiting the body he claimed was Booth's.
In 1938, Bates allowed a Life magazine photographer to photograph the mummified body at an exhibit called Jay Gould's Million Dollar Spectacle. Doctors and historians, comparing the body to Booth's medical records, had to confess that the mummy shared physical characteristics with the living Booth.
Specifically, the left leg was shorter than the right. The right thumb was permanently damaged after an old accident, and a scar on the neck matched Booth's.
In spite of the physical similarities between Bates' mummy and John Wilkes Booth, historians concluded that the body probably did not belong to Booth.
In recent years, Booth's descendants have offered to perform DNA tests on the mummy to confirm once and for all whether the corpse belonged to John Wilkes Booth. The mummy's current owners have declined all offers.
The major problem with this theory is, quite simply, there's little evidence to support it. None of the claims Bates made have been independently verified, and he had a financial incentive to make up sensational stories for the sake of book and ticket sales.
While the mummy shares some physical traits with Booth, its current owner's reluctance to perform a DNA test also suggests that they know the body doesn't belong to Booth. Or, at the very least, they have their own serious doubts about its authenticity.
Overall, we give this theory a 1 out of 10. It's a fun bit of speculation, but not strong enough to be believed.
Even before his assassination, Abraham Lincoln's presidency was troubled, and the end of the Civil War was only the first step toward reuniting a deeply divided country.
Like the United States, Lincoln's administration was full of people who vehemently disagreed with Lincoln's policies and with one another. While differing political views don't always lead to murder, Lincoln's many rivals and enemies have provided conspiracy theorists with no shortage of potential conspirators for the past century and a half.
Now that Lincoln's assassination is so far in the past, and all the people involved long dead, it's unlikely we'll uncover any new evidence to definitively prove or disprove any theory.
Most of the theories about Lincoln's death involve coincidence and speculation, but very little concrete evidence. Sometimes the simplest explanation is the most likely explanation, and in this case, we have to come down on the side of the official story— that John Wilkes Booth decided on his own to assassinate Lincoln, and that his only conspirators have already been identified, arrested, and sentenced.
Thanks for tuning in to Conspiracy Theories. If you want to hear more conspiracy theories or listen to any of Parcast's other podcasts, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. And if you enjoy the show, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review.
Tell us your favorite conspiracy theories on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and on Twitter at Parcast Network.
Join us next week for more conspiracy theories.
Until then, remember, the truth isn't always the best story.
And the official story isn't always the truth. Conspiracy Theories was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro and Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Conspiracy Theories is written by Angela Jorgensen and stars Molly Brandenburg and Carter Roy.